This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. The pandemic has hit Osceola County's economy particularly hard. The unemployment rate in the county was more than 22% in the latest tally from the State Department of Economic Opportunity. That's higher than any other county in the state of Florida. Well, today we're talking about how local officials are responding to the crisis. We're joined by Osceola County School Board member Kelvin Soto. Kelvin, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Matthew.
And we're hoping to also be joined by Kissimmee Mayor Jose Alvarez. Hopefully he can join us later in the program as well. You can also join the conversation online. Tweet us your comments and questions. We are at WMFE Orlando. So, Kelvin, obviously Osceola County, like other school districts, is preparing to reopen. What's the plan for Osceola County?
As it stands right now, we are planning to open our schools on August 24th. We have just published as well early this morning how we're going to be proceeding with sports and what kind of programs and precautions we're going to be taking for our athletes. And, you know, it's a very fluid situation, I will say that, Matthew.
Yeah, as far as the school sports goes, I know you all had to kind of dial things back pretty dramatically there. What has the plan, or what is the plan going forward for that aspect of school?
Well, we just published the schedules that we're going to follow. It's pretty much aligned with the guidance and recommendation from the Florida High School Athletics Association, and we're going to move forward in that manner. I think that there's a little bit of optimism involved in our planning, and we certainly do hope that the conditions improve in terms of number of cases that are appearing daily, and our ability to get a hold of resources for rapid testing, and that would make our safety protocols work the way that we intend them to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so what about that? Because, you know, obviously there's a high demand for test kits statewide. We're sort of seeing that play out at the county level, you know, across the state of Florida. In Orange County, for example, they talked early on in the pandemic about the need for extra materials to kind of bump up the testing. What does that look like from your perspective in Osceola County?
Well, I'm looking forward to the report that, you know, for the updates that the board receives from the school district administration. In our last board meeting, the superintendent and her team proposed that we delay the start of school, and of course that was a request that the school board approved with a unanimous vote. But we also engaged in meaningful conversations about how we're going to be using that time. And, of course, I feel that any kind of back-to-school plan has to have a robust and scientifically valid and useful testing protocol. Mm-hmm. That was part of the focus that I had. And I'm looking forward to seeing what that's going to look like. I don't feel comfortable without that piece to recommend that students or staff return to the classroom. So, I'm looking forward to seeing where we are with that.
Yeah. So if you could take off your school board member hat for a moment to just kind of talk about what it's like as a member of the community in Osceola County. Obviously the pandemic has hit particularly hard, just mentioning that unemployment rate. I mean, that's staggering, right? Sort of up over 22%. What's it like, you know, what's it been like for the last couple of months kind of contemplating that and sort of wondering how folks are getting on? What are you hearing from people in the community?
Well, I acknowledge that there's a lot of concern, but the source of that concern is really what I want to understand. And I cannot take off the hat of being on the school board. That is what dominates my life, Matthew, right now. Mm-hmm. That is what most concerns me. And I have a very, my responsibility in this is great. So my role, of course, is to understand what's going on in the community as a member as well, to add to that knowledge. And so I do feel that there's legitimate concern. I feel that a lot of folks probably think that, that the school district or the government, you know, the state government is not listening to them, or is not really looking at the data and interpreting it in a way that they feel that benefits their safety. Mm-hmm. And that's something that needs to be worked on. I think that locally our school district is doing well in that capacity, but I think that people want to hear it from a higher, you know, source. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I feel. And I also feel, finally, and I'll pause after this, that, you know, people are relying on us to use, you know, to really make decisions based on science. They know from so many sources of information about what we're dealing with. They're able to read scientific papers, valid, mm-hmm. valid papers written and valid reporting on this epidemic. And so they're informed. And if what we say and what we're doing doesn't resonate, if there's some cognitive dissonance, they're not going to be happy, and they're not going to feel safe in returning to school. So I think we have some more work to do, and you know, and that's my role, and I take it very seriously. It is the most important thing that I have going on in my life right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are listening to Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking about the coronavirus pandemic and its impact in Osceola County. With us on the line, Calvin Soto. He's a school board member in Osceola County. We're also joined now by Jose Alvarez. He's the mayor of Kissimmee. Mayor Alvarez, are you there?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Thanks so much for joining us. So, you know, this is a pretty dramatic turnaround for the city of Kissimmee, right? And the county, of course, as well. Like, just thinking about that unemployment number, what keeps you up the most about where we are in the pandemic right now, whether it's the economy, whether it's the health crisis itself? What's going through your mind?
We have close to 77,000 residents in Kissimmee. Osceola County is ranked first in the state of Florida in unemployment. And when they broke down the numbers between the two cities and the county, Kissimmee is ranked first mm-hmm. between the county and the city of St. Cloud. So there's a lot of concern. We know that there's a lot of people in need. We know that there's a lot of people concerned and worried for their own health, but they're in need. We are, as local governments, trying to make sure we make the right decisions to keep people protected and healthy. And we're also concerned that if we continue with the numbers as they're going in Florida, we could probably potentially see another shutdown. And if that was to happen, I don't think the majority of our small businesses will be able to survive another shutdown. So our job as elected officials here in the city and in the county is to make sure that we make the proper decisions. But most importantly is continuing to ask our residents to do their part, right? So government mm-hmm. cannot do their part alone. They need to protect themselves from coronavirus. This virus will be here for a very long time. We just need to learn to live with it. And it's usually three simple rules. Keeping your hands, keep washing your hands and your hygiene, and social distancing, and keep wearing your face cover. That mm-hmm. is what all the experts are saying. And that's what we're trying to get people to understand, that if we comply with that, we can live with COVID-19, and we can save a lot of lives, and we can also protect the businesses where people can start going back to work.
I want to ask, Mayor, because I know that you volunteer, and obviously you're a small business owner yourself, and you've got your mayoral duties as well. What's your kind of level of concern being out and about in the community, and you know whether you're helping out at food distribution or kind of meeting with city commissioners, what have you? Like, are you concerned yourself? Because we have heard about some, you know, whether the county or state or other officials coming down with coronavirus. What's your level of concern personally about the potential for catching
personally,
this?
Personally, I take care of myself. I adhere to the recommendations of the experts. I don't have too much contact with too many people. A lot of our as elected officials, and I think all of us, our lives have changed where we do a lot of Zoom meetings and Google meetings, and, you know, we have gone in a different direction to try to protect ourselves. You know, I also have a family. I have daughters. I have grandkids that I have to protect myself for them, right? So when you protect yourself, you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for those around you. So personally, that's what I do. When it comes to getting involved, we're all involved. We're constantly involved in doing food drives. As the mayor, I'm involved begging companies to donate food to our food banks. Our food banks continue to be empty every other week. Mm-hmm. Because the need is there. Every time we do a food drive, we usually have enough for 500, 600 vehicles, and we usually get 1,000, 1,500 cars.
Hmm.
I'm also involved with the Union of Disney Unite Here, and every week we do a food drive. We usually see about 600 families coming through every single week. And so it's also making sure that they have what they need to serve the employees of Disney, that not all of them have been able to go back to work. The union right. that I work with has 19,000 union members, and I think about 2,000 of them only went to work, and mm-hmm. about 60% of them haven't seen an unemployment check. Think of that. These people were laid off at no fault of their own since March, and they haven't seen one paycheck. So this is how we know that the need is there, and we need to make sure that we can provide what we can to help them survive.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. With us on the line, Kissimmee Mayor Jose Alvarez. We're also joined by Osceola County School Board member Calvin Soto, talking about the coronavirus pandemic and its impact on the economy and the health of the folks of Osceola County. You can join the conversation as well. Tweet us your questions for Calvin Soto or Jose Alvarez at WMFE Orlando. Mayor Alvarez, I just want to ask you, you've been pretty outspoken about the need for some of the measures like masking up and social distancing. What kind of response have you gotten from the community? Has there been a bit of pushback to that?
You know, we've had pushbacks. I have been requesting the county commission until this week that the county commission finally approve to put their minor penalties, but they are penalties. We do have a mandatory face cover, and we've had it since April.
Mm-hmm.
But there hasn't been what I call meat on the bone. There hasn't been no penalties, and unfortunately, there is a group of people that decide that this is against their rights of wearing a face cover if they don't want to. So what I tell them is, I understand your rights, right? So as an immigrant, I respect and love the rights that this country gives us. But also, what about the rights of the people that are around them, right? So what about their rights? What if you are asymptomatic and you give what you have to those around you because you're only thinking of yourself, right? And as Americans, we're better than that. This is a better country than that. So I have heard more positive from the community than negative. Usually the positive are very quiet, but they let everyone know what they are in need of. And one of the things they needed is they said, please do these things mandatory to protect ourselves. And the county commission and the great wisdom, finally this past Monday, they passed the penalties. And I hope that people would adhere to them. They're very simple penalties. The first offense is just a warning.
Mm-hmm.
The second offense is $25. The third is $50. But we should have never got to that, right? So everyone should have said, you know, let's do the right thing. And the right thing we know as we hear the experts is wear a face cover. And that's mainly what we've been asking everyone. So, but yeah, I mean, there's negative views, and there is a lot of the positive. And as elected officials, I tell you, and Kelvin can tell you, when you sit behind the dais, it's hard to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And when we make decisions, these are decisions that benefit the many, right? So we have to look at not one or two, but we have to look at who is this going to help? How many people is this going to help? And it's not an easy decision to make when you sit back there. But unfortunately, sometimes those are decisions that you have to make.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic in Osceola County. With us on the line, Kissimmee Mayor Jose Alvarez and Osceola County School Board member Kelvin Soto. You can join the conversation as well if you have thoughts about the mask mandate and the other social distancing ordinances in Osceola County and penalties associated with that. Send us a tweet. We're at WMFE Orlando. Mayor Alvarez and School Board Member Kelvin Soto, please stay on the line. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. With us on the program, Kissimmee Mayor Jose Alvarez and Osceola County School Board Member Kelvin Soto. Talking about the pandemic and its impact on Osceola County, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Send us a tweet at WMFE Orlando. Kelvin Soto, I want to just talk about the school district for a moment. And it's not the first time you've had to really pivot and adapt, right? I mean, in recent years, one example after Hurricane Maria, we talked to you on this show about accommodating students newly arrived from Puerto Rico. How is the school district coping? Do you kind of feel like you are able to turn on a dime and account for these unusual new times?
Well, that's a very good observation. And so we have always, as long as I've been on the board, tried to have reserves and have protocols that we can implement in case of emergencies. And I think that was something that was culturally born before I got elected from several hurricanes that came by. We also did a very impressive and comprehensive investment in technology. We mm-hmm. improved the connectivity of all of our schools. We improved the technology. We invested in bringing technology for our students to take home with them. And all of those things, I guess, you know, put us in good footing on March to be able to go ahead and say, hey, look, you know what? We're facing this epidemic. We don't know what this is going to be like. So, once in a generational thing, and we're going to learn as much as we can, but we're going to do things on the safe side. We'll keep our students home. We're going to deliver food to them. We're going to deliver technology to them. We're going to get our teachers trained in distance learning. And we made it through the end of that semester. I'm very proud of how this school district really responded. And we learned a lot. That's the most important thing, because we used mm-hmm. that knowledge and during the summer to create what I believe is a very comprehensive and hopefully very effective back to school plan. We made sure that we included all of the stakeholders of the community and the medical professionals and scientists that were going to guide us through this. And so, yeah, I mean, thank you for the observation. I wanted to put some details into what this and this school board was able to do with our community. And you know, it's still a good situation because we have this plan of reopening, which gives choices to the to our parents or students. But somehow the conditions that we're not in control of, which is, you know, the businesses, the guidance of the state and, you know, and reopening, led to an alarming spike of cases that really makes reopening schools a dangerous proposition at this point.
Mayor Alvarez, I want to sort of pivot to you for a moment. How important is it for the economy of Kissimmee, particularly, and the county, I guess, for schools to reopen? I mean, a lot of parents, I'm sure, must be sort of weighing the dilemma of childcare versus healthcare and worrying about that.
May I briefly? I will be as brief as possible.
Oh, sure.
Mr. Petty?
Yeah,
all
go
right.
for it.
Here's the thing that must be clear, that when the school district and the school board is approving a reopening plan, when we say we're taking science into the account, science includes the effects of an economy. It includes the effects on households. It includes learning gains. It includes the child's development. It includes the impact in the society at every level, including economic level. And so we are trying to make a back-to-school plan where there is a zero risk for everybody involved. The economy does not really allow for that. Mm-hmm. Actually, our social conditions do not allow for that. So it is important that we have a plan that allows, that will give the option for parents to have their schools, their children come back to school. The whole point is that we want to lower the risk as much as possible. And right now, factors beyond our control, which is everybody running around without masks, people carrying on as though this COVID is the flu, is really working against our plans. That's mm-hmm. all.
Thanks, Calvin. Your thoughts, Mira Alvarez, on the kind of dilemma there between, you know, the need to get back to work and the kind of healthcare concerns as well. Obviously, it's important for the economy to get those schools open. But what are your thoughts on that? I mean, what's the kind of line you have to walk there?
You know, it's a fine line. I hear the concerns of the teachers and the school staff, afraid for their own health and afraid for their children's health. You know, we need to understand science is showing us that children could be carriers. And so in schools, as we do indoor schooling, we're putting these teachers and we're putting the school staff, school bus drivers in jeopardy of getting sick. I mean, we do know that having kids back to school is going to help us to get parents back to work as we start moving forward. But as we continue with these numbers to climb, you know, and having numbers of 10, 15,000 numbers a day, we need to think of the safety of people and the safety of our children and the safety of everyone around them. You know, so it's a tough balance to keep because they both depend on each other, kids going back to school and parents going back to work. But we need to think of the life of the school teachers and staff mm-hmm. that we're putting in jeopardy and the lives of the kids also. We've seen now that there is kids in the hospital very sick with this virus. And so it's a tough balance, but I do see the concern that a lot of teachers have.
You mentioned before the break, Mayor, you know, the fact that some workers were going back to Disney, you know, some of those unionized workers that you mentioned, but not all of them, and obviously some concerns there. But just how big a deal is it for the economy in your area to have those theme parks open again and running, albeit at lower capacity?
Look, you know, the top part of our economy in Osceola County and here in Central Florida is the hospitality industry. And that is the industry that's been hit the worst. And so a lot of those employees live here in Osceola County and in Kissimmee. You know, in Kissimmee itself, about 60% of our economy depends on the hospitality industry. And so, of course, we have those high numbers. Orange County is second in the state when it comes to unemployment because, again, it depends so much on the hospitality industry. COVID-19, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, is going to teach us a lot of lessons. But one of the lessons we need to learn also is that we cannot depend on one part of the economy at all. We need to diversify on different type of jobs and companies that we attract here to make sure that people can survive with a different type of companies and resources. We cannot continue to just depend on the hospitality industry to survive. The hospitality industry is great, but look where we're at right now. I mean, Disney is doing the reopening, but they're doing it slowly because they're not getting, and you got to look at it on the business side also, they're not getting the tourists that they used to get before. And it'll be quite a while before they can get anywhere near where they were before. And mm-hmm. so the ones that suffer from that is not only the company, but mainly those employees, those thousands and thousands of employees that they have that are unemployed. When
right.
Disney finally furloughed and laid off employees, Disney did something that no other company did. They sent all the information of their employees to the AEO mm-hmm. of the unemployment. But yet, majority of those people are still waiting for a check. They have all the information of everyone that was laid off, and they're still waiting to get a paycheck. There's no reason for that. And so if we are here to help these people that we know that they can't get back to work, we have to make sure that we pay them those unemployment checks. And with the school board, you know, you guys need to hear the concern that your teachers and your employees are saying, that they're concerned for their own lives themselves. And, you know, as a grandparent, I don't want to see my kid in school right now. I don't know if one of those employees are sick and my grandson is going to get sick and bring it home and get the rest of the family ill. And so those are big concerns, and those are, have to be a lot of conversations that we all need to have.
Yeah, some big concerns there, as you say. Calvin Sutter, just back to you for a moment. Actually, we have a question coming in from a listener. In Osceola County Schools, what percentage of your employees are in the HSP group, and what are your plans for keeping them safe?
I'll answer this thing in general. Our back-to-school plans, obviously, it's comprehensive. And it's also, you know, there's also the OCEA, the local syndicate for teachers, is a part of our planning, you know, task force. And so, you know, whenever I'm asked, you know, what kind of safety precautions we're taking, you know, please understand that there's, you know, we're looking at CDC guidelines, for health guidelines. We're looking at
we're actually gonna have to wrap it up. I'm afraid we're kind of a little close on time. But Calvin Sutter, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Intersection today. Appreciate it. We're also joined by Kissimmee Mayor Jose Alvarez. Mr. Alvarez, thank you as well. Still to come, next week the moratorium on evictions is set to expire. Reverend Mary Lee Downey's worried about that will land some families in Osceola County on the street. We'll talk to her about the challenge of running a nonprofit focused on helping the homeless in a pandemic. We're back in a minute. This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. The pandemic has thrown up all sorts of challenges for businesses and nonprofits alike trying to navigate the healthcare crisis and stay afloat. But what impact does a pandemic and a sharp recession have on a nonprofit that's focused on affordable housing? Reverend Mary Lee Downey, CEO and founder of the Community Hope Center of Osceola County, says her organization has had to put an affordable housing project on hold, and when the pandemic struck, she says the nonprofit suddenly found itself dealing with a surge in demand for food assistance. Reverend Mary Lee Downey, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
So what's the last few months been like for the Community Hope Center?
So we have seen just a tremendous uptick in people who are looking for assistance when it comes, especially for food insecurity, especially at the very beginning of the pandemic. We saw a lot of people who were really just worried about where their next meal was going to come from. And so we have been working primarily to kind of address that kind of first basic need of folks, is to making sure that people have adequate food available to them in their households. But then as we continue to look at all of the ripple effects that, you know, a downturn economy, a 22.9% unemployment rate, we are looking down, you know, at a future where many, many, many households are looking at eviction. And we're really worried about that right now. Since the COVID layoffs, we've given out about 78,000 pounds of food, and that's to over 3,000 households. And if you remember, the way that we kind of count folks is by heartbeats. So that's 13,000 heartbeats in our community who was seeking food assistance in the last few months.
So it sounds like you've had to reconfigure the way you operate because of the pandemic.
Absolutely. So one of the key components of the Hope Center that we believe firmly in is that we believe in listening to the needs of the people that we serve. And so the biggest need that people identified to us very early on was hunger. And so even though we were not primarily a hunger organization, that was a part of our programming, but it wasn't the key component of our programming, we had to pivot very quickly to meet the needs of our community. And so we did have to make some changes. We now have a drive-through food pantry once a week where we have roughly about 1,000 heartbeats coming through that drive-through, and trying to, you know, to cover all of our bases when it comes to COVID-19, keeping people safe, keeping social distances. It's outside, very little interaction, so that we can make sure that people are as safe as possible, everyone wearing their mask. But we definitely had to pivot. We also had to make some structural changes to our actual building, putting up plexiglass, making some changes because our building is kind of an open space building, making some changes of how we see the people that we serve. We're doing a lot more virtual appointments than we've done in the past, just really trying to make things as open as possible to people so that they can still receive services, but within those safety precautions.
What about the impact of COVID-19 on your staff? Have you had anybody come down with it? Because it, you know, right now it's surging, right? And a lot of businesses have had to contend with that as well. So have you been able to keep, or have folks been able to keep themselves safe?
So that was absolutely a huge concern of mine. The homeless population is one of the most vulnerable populations that are something that we want to really pay attention to. And so we wanted to make sure that we were keeping our staff safe for their own safety, but also for the safety of the people that we serve. The last thing we wanted to do was for our staff to become infected and then give it to a population where it could spread rapidly. And so we have worked very hard and diligent to make sure that we've practiced every precaution necessary. And so far, our team has not had a case of COVID. We consider that a blessing. We also know that we're making some really wise choices, but we also know that the virus doesn't discriminate. And even when people are making really good choices, anyone could come down with it. And so we are just very thankful that that has not occurred.
In a county like Osceola, where, you know, the economic need is so widespread right now and people are so hard hit, are you having trouble getting enough donations to fill the shelves of your food bank?
So one of the most wonderful things that has come out of this is that has actually not been a problem. We have had the community respond so well to our need of feeding hungry bellies. Osceola County did an initiative where they helped stock our food pantries for several weeks. We applied for very quickly some grants to a few different foundations, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, People Stepping in the Gap. Second Harvest Food Bank has been a wonderful partner in support of helping us through every step of the way, as well as, you know, as we continue to look at the future in the CARES Act, there were emergency food and shelter dollars available, and we were able to apply for those. And so thus far, when it comes to purchasing the food and making sure to get it out into the community, we've been very, very just able to address that need and be able to do that. We were very worried about that at the beginning. One of the biggest concerns that we continue to have is not necessarily food, but other basic need items, because those are things that are not covered under those funding sources. So things like diapers, things like hygiene items such as deodorant, things that our clients need that are very hard to come by. And so those are still places that we continue to ask for our community support and raise those funds as well.
And of course, right at the start of this pandemic, there was a big shortage of toilet paper, which was kind of this weird little oddity about the fact that people were suddenly rushing to grab toilet paper off the shelves. Has that been something that you've had to put in an extra ask for folks to donate?
You know, toilet paper was not so much a thing that we struggled with, but I will tell you that like bleach wipes and disinfected aerosols, which are things that we desperately need in our service center, those were very, very hard to come by. They are still very hard to come by in a lot of ways. And so that definitely is a need that we have.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Reverend Mary Lee, the CEO of the Community Hope Center in Osceola County. So food is one thing and other basic necessities, but that's not all you do, right? I mean, you're also helping folks with homeless issues. Just explain a little bit for maybe people who aren't so familiar with what you do, what you would normally be doing if there weren't a pandemic happening.
So what the Community Hope Center does is we help people who are experiencing poverty and homelessness address their barriers to overcome those issues of poverty and homelessness. And that mostly presents itself in helping people find adequate housing. And so we are primarily a housing organization, helping people get into safe, sustainable, financially accessible housing. And so that's what we would be doing. And it is what we are still doing. We have been very proud of our team who's continued to meet with the people that we serve, continue to meet with their clients and be able to house in the midst of all of this about 13 households who have been able to find sustainable housing, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic. We would obviously like that to be a higher number. And, you know, on the other side of the fence is we're looking towards the future because we are an organization that helps people find financially sustainable housing. We are very much worried about the upcoming evictions that could happen as soon as July 31st. And so we are an organization that helps people find their next steps in that way.
So what's your normal kind of level of families you're able to house over the course of a year?
So we normally house somewhere between 40 to 50 households a year, and that's basically due to the lack of housing stock in Osceola County. We would be able to do more if we were able to find more affordable units. And so we've been pretty impressed that even though we're in the middle of a pandemic, we're probably on target to maybe hit that 40 to 50 for the year, as long as we can find housing stock.
Do you have a sense of the impact the pandemic might be having on the demand, though, for affordable housing?
So right now, what I can tell you that in Osceola County, for every 100 extremely low income families that we serve, there are only 20 available units. And then for every 100 families that we serve who are at the 50% of area median income, that's about 26 units. And so the housing stock was already a huge, huge problem in our community, which is why one of the tenets of the Hope Center is to build affordable housing in our community and encourage others to build affordable housing in our communities. And so we definitely know that as we continue to see the pandemic just kind of rage through Osceola County and our community, the outcomes and the ramifications of what that's going to look like when it comes to how many units are available, how many people are actually evicted, it's just kind of an unknown, but it seems terrifying.
I wanted to ask you, back in March when I talked to you last, Reverend, we spoke a little bit about plans that the Community Hope Center had for building some affordable units on some land. Any updates on that? I'm wondering if the pandemic has put the brakes on that project at all.
So absolutely it has, which is just heartbreaking to me. But it's one of those situations where the community is so unstable that it's very hard to plan out a $35 million capital raise or even a $10 million capital raise at this point. And so we really are still trying to kind of walk through that journey to see what that looks like. And we know that the pandemic has definitely changed our reality. And so we're just kind of going through the motions to see, you know, what is next. That definitely is still something that the Hope Center desperately wants to accomplish and something that is desperately needed in our community. That's kind of the place that I sit, is that right now it looks impossible, and right now it's needed more than ever.
Right. I guess in some ways it's a little bit hard to just kind of see through the next few months because the numbers seem to be going down, all of a sudden they've surged again. The future is a little bit of an unknown.
It's very hard to be a leader right now, I think, in this space. And I'm trying to remind people that, to give all of our leaders in all places a lot of grace, because no one knows how to lead through a pandemic. No one has a crystal ball. No one knows how this is fully going to affect. It's really hard to look back at history. We have some markers that we can look at. We can look at what Central Florida looked like in 2008 during the recession. We can see some of those things. We can look all the way back to 2001 after a 9/11 attack and what that did to the tourism industry. But really, we are in some really uncharted waters right now. And so it's very, very hard to strategize and to plan for a future that we're all very uncertain about.
So let's go back to the potential removal of that moratorium on evictions. What kind of planning are you able to do to try and mitigate whatever the impacts of that may be if, in fact, that moratorium is lifted next week?
So one of the things that we've tried to do with the people that we serve is to have conversations around what their households look like. So that we can at least know what the future is going to hold for them. You know, are you able to make payments? What does that look like? Are you behind? Do you anticipate getting evicted on that day? So with the people that we are in current relationship with, people that we're currently serving, we are able to kind of help walk through that journey and see where they are. So at least we can try to walk through those folks and help them stay sustainable in their places. So that may mean that we can look at some dollars that are available in our community to help. We also have a meeting with United Way. There's a round table where many of us will be discussing our strategies and talking about what funding sources we have available and how we can work together to address that need. I hope and pray that we see an extension. I honestly do. I know we can't extend it forever. I know that there are landlords and business owners on the other side who are also hurting, and I understand that completely. But I also know that I do not want to see thousands upon thousands of families on the street because we don't have the capacity to serve them in our community right now if that happens. Right now that we know, you know, in the whole state of Florida, that 30% of Floridians missed last month's rent, and they have little confidence that they will be able to make next month's payment on time. And so that in itself is a very large number for our community.
For people listening, what would you suggest? I mean, is there anything kind of immediate that people can do to help out if they are in the position where they aren't facing some rent crisis themselves?
I mean, I think definitely if you are a property owner and you have the flexibility to work with the people who are in your units, that would definitely be something that I would absolutely encourage across the board, even though it might not be the most financially smart decision. It could be the most compassionate decision if that's a possibility for people. I understand for some people that may not be a possibility. I do know for those who have mortgages on their units, you know, there is some help through mortgage assistance, and I would absolutely ask for them to reach out to their people they're beholden to see if they can get any leniency. I mean, I just think about the parable that Jesus told about where the man owed a debt and he asked his debtor to go and if he could get relief, and he got relief, but then he didn't trickle that relief down to the people who also had debts to him. And so I would think about us looking at a strategy like that. How can we get relief from the top and then trickle it down to relief to everybody? And so as much as possible, as many people who can think philanthropically in that way can think about how this is at a time when we are banding together as a community as much as possible. I also understand that there are some folks who are just not able to do that. And so I think for those folks, I would encourage them to be communicative with the people that are renting their units. I mean, I would just love to see less of a landlord-tenant relationship be such business and more be more like a relationship. I know that business as usual is something that we're all very used to, but this is not the time for that type of strategy. This is a time where we look at the greater need in our community and we find ways that we can work together. We find, okay, well, what is the absolute amount that has to be paid to keep this family in this unit, but also make sure the bills are paid on the other side? And so looking at those strategies, thinking about, you know, if there are late fees, you know, if you think about nonprofits who are going to be working to help these families stay in units, a relief of late fees, if those late fees are not necessary, my goodness, that would be a huge relief, because those late fees are very, very hard for our grants to cover. And so sometimes what happens with families is we end up, you know, being able to pay the rent, but we can't cover the fee. And so there's still, you know, they're still in that place of eviction because not everything is paid. And so I would just think, you know, think about strategies where you can, if possible, offer relief.
Mm-hmm. What about the potential for that $600 federal benefit going away as well? Is that something that concerns you, keeps you up at night?
Absolutely. It absolutely keeps me up at night. I was reading just yesterday, it looks like that they may extend it, but it may be at a lower amount. I think anything would be better than nothing. The amount of unemployment, the $225 for people who are getting regular unemployment, and then the $125 for gig workers, which is a lot of contractors and freelancers in our community, that's just not enough to sustain households. That is just not even close to the amount to help people stay on their feet. So I am very, very concerned about the PUA funds going away. I am actually, you know, advocating for that quite a bit, that it get extended. I hope that it does. I know that in the space between when unemployment wasn't available because people were having a hard time getting into the system, people were having a hard time getting registered, people were coming to our doors in places of desperation. And the last thing that I want to happen in our community is people having to come to our doors in desperation. People should not have to live their lives that way.
Do you help a lot of multi-generation or multi-family households as well?
There are a lot of households that are they're multi-generational. There are a lot of households that we serve that are in that space. Mm-hmm. And so you do have, and that's, oh, that dynamic is really interesting when it comes to kids going back to school.
Right.
And so there's what this pandemic has done is it has kind of brought to attention many areas where our society has been set up for a two-parent working household with kids, where one parent is the breadwinner and one has more flexibility. We still live in a society where we think that that is the norm. And so I think the pandemic is kind of opening up the gates to see that really that's not the norm in our community. And we have a lot of families who are in a lot of more, I don't want to use the word untraditional, but that's the only one I can use right now, than what I think our society is set up for. And so I would love to see just overall our community kind of get out of that mindset and start thinking about problem solving in a way that serves everyone and every household and the needs that they have.
I just want to come back finally, Reverend Mary Lee Downey, to a comment you made earlier about the need to give leaders a little bit of grace. It's obviously been a tough 4 or 5 months. How's it been for you? Have you kind of had to do some soul searching the last couple of months?
I mean, I definitely think that my job and many of our jobs, we had to pivot in our leadership. And I think that good leaders were willing to do that. Leaders who were kind of stuck in a rut and kind of thought, you know, we're just going to do things the way we've always done it. I think that's where we've seen a lot of struggle without me getting too political. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that leaders who are willing to problem solve and to pivot and to think about a full community response and not just the response for their business or their organization have been able to navigate this a little bit stronger. And lucky for me, you know, that is a mindset that I kind of envision of the Hope Center in general. We are an organization that believes that we always flex and move because, again, we listen to the needs of the people that we serve. And so as our folks were telling us what it is that they actually needed, we knew that we needed to meet that need. We could have responded very differently. And that wouldn't have necessarily been bad, but we would not have been able to step into the gap the way that we just do so well as an organization. I have a team of individuals who are incredibly flexible and are willing to just kind of jump in and do whatever it takes to make sure that we do the best for the people that we serve. That's our goal. And I wish that was the goal of all of our leaders. If that was the goal of our leadership, to be thinking about the people that they serve, because all of our leaders are servant leaders or should be servant leaders. They're public leaders. They're public servants. If they think about being a public servant as a servant leader, I think that we could see a lot more problem solving happening right now.
Reverend Mary Lee Downey is the CEO of the Community Hope Center in Osceola County. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Support for Intersection comes from Advent Health and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Production assistance for this week's show from Juan Gualda. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find previous episodes on our website, wmfe.org/intersection. When you donate right now to support WMFE, you're making all the news and information you rely on available for everyone free of charge. That service is as important today as ever, and it starts with your gift. Visit WMFE.org to make your contribution, and thanks. I'm Matthew Petty. You can follow me on Twitter at Matthew_Petty. Thanks for listening.